The Quickest Draw by T.T. Flynn. Press Moorhead came home from his Argentine ranches on the 1020 train, and no one in the crowd around the weathered little Cottonwood Springs station recognized the tall man in the expensive gray suit and hat, whose tanned face was alert and eager with anticipation. Holding his cowhide bag, Press stood there on the platform, putting names to faces. Names he'd remembered for 11 years. And suddenly it struck him that it wasn't like what he thought it would be. His face revealed a little dismay as he glimpsed a portly young woman holding a candy-smeared baby. Martha Peters. She wasn't the biggest of the surprises. Something hungry and eager that had lasted through the years drew back in Press Moorhead, and he spoke to no one. The hotel seemed peopled with strangers. On a whim, Press signed the register as John Emery. Time enough to make himself known after he'd seen Tom Moorhead and Phil Moorhead, his father and brother. At 18, Press Moorhead had been a ranch kid who had taken it on the run after a minor shooting scrape over a dance. Not bad trouble. His father could have easily settled it for him. But there had been other brawls, and Tom Moorhead had been increasingly exasperated. And anyway, the great horizons had been calling to the restless youth. Now, at 29, Press rode a livery horse toward the Bar Z, dressed in riding boots and overall trousers he had changed into in his hotel room. Later, there would be time enough to tell about those square miles of Argentine grassland, herds of fat cattle, and the great hacienda house he shared with a partner. You could reach the Bar Z by the long pass around to Turquoise Creek, or you could take the shorter cut up Bearhead Canyon, up the narrow switchback trail. Press rode up Bearhead Canyon, as he had many times in the past. 1,000 feet deep, Bearhead Canyon slashed down from the mountains, and the trail up the side had dangerous caved-in spots. Twice, Press dismounted, testing the trail himself. His movements sent pebbles plunging hundreds of feet into space. Near the top, the trail edge caved without warning. One hoof of the clay bank flew off into space. The horse plunged forward, scrambling madly to safety. When it was over, Press rested in the saddle, eyeing the sheer drop to the boiling current of Bear Creek far down.
Close.
The vast, flat Argentine pampas got you out of the habit of this sort of thing. Clearing the pass, he rode over the rim of Bearhead Canyon and down through the green mountain grass and trees of the long northern slope. This was Bar Z land, from the rim of Bearhead Canyon to the foothill flats far beyond Turquoise Creek. Old Tom Moorhead homesteaded on Turquoise Creek and leased and bought until he had the Bar Z as he wanted it. Summer pasture on the high slopes, winter grass in the lower lands. Not a big ranch, but a good ranch. The bullet that tore the pommel leather off was no part of that picture. Press reined sharply. Someone had shot at him with a rifle. Someone on the Bar Z. The gunman came galloping through the cedars, and Press watched with narrowing eyes. This wasn't any man he knew. The saddle scabbard showed that the stranger's repeating rifle traveled with him. Crossed cartridge belts supported business-like gun holsters. The man wore chaps and a weather-beaten old hat. In his early 20s, he showed a hard, young roughness bearing no welcome.
Maybe that gun went off by mistake.
How come you're on Bar Z land?
You a Bar Z rider?
You hit it.
Press smiled faintly. He'd met 100 such young men, tough, hard, whose guns were for sale to handle any trouble if the pay was right.
Must be something wrong. The Bar Z didn't used to need gun hands.
They're riding now. Anyone with you?
Press was beginning to enjoy the situation.
I didn't see anyone.
Where'd you come from?
Up Bearhead Canyon from Cottonwood Springs. I'd like to visit the Bar Z if there's no objections.
Got business there?
You might say so.
Know how to get to the ranch house?
I'll take a chance on finding it.
The rifle motioned him on.
The ranch house, stranger. No place else.
Funny when you thought about it. This welcome, cold as a winter norther off the high peaks. But the brusque efficiency of the young gunman was sobering. Press knew his father wouldn't hire such men if the provocation weren't great. He took the down slopes at an easy gallop, the young gunman close behind him. As they reached the house and ranch yard, a girl galloped past an outer corral to meet him. Press pulled to a walk, eyeing her in half consternation. She wore overall trousers, riding boots, a loose, free blouse. Her hat hung to the saddle pommel, and her brown hair was free in the wind.
What is it, McAllister?
There had been no women on the Bar Z when Press had left. Phil Moorhead must have married, and well, and luckily, Press thought. This girl had a tense, proud face and a fire of energy that fed from the spirit.
Found him alone this side of Bearhead Canyon. Says he came up the canyon from Cottonwood Springs, heading here to the ranch house, so I brought him in.
Press noted the woman's dark eyes, warily questioning. He smiled, but there was no answering smile for him. Her saddle carried a scabbard and rifle, her belt holster a pearl-handled gun.
I don't know you. What do you want on Bar Z land?
I just dropped in to talk to Tom Moorhead and Phil. You might let them know they've got a visitor.
Do you live around here?
Not now, I used to. When I got into Cottonwood Springs today, I rode over for a talk.
You've had the ride for nothing. My brother and I own the Bar Z now. We bought the ranch from Tom Moorhead.
Well, I hadn't heard. Where can I find Tom and Phil, ma'am?
At the question, he would have sworn that an additional barrier came up between them, that the fire inside her flamed and defied him.
You won't find them. They're dead.
The wild, roistering years young Press Moorhead had put in on the hot, feverish lands of South America had brought iron control, but he felt the shock of that cold announcement slow his heart. For a moment, he was frozen. Then he found his voice, and surprisingly, he could still speak calmly.
I hadn't heard that either. No. It's news, ma'am. A surprise.
The girl sat stiffly in the saddle, watching him. After a moment, she reached into a trouser pocket and brought out a gumdrop. She bit the gumdrop in two and chewed it slowly, her eyes still on him. For some reason, that bit of candy fired cold anger under Press's sudden grief. The two dead Moorhead men didn't seem to bother her in the least. She was indifferent and coldly antagonistic.
How'd they die?
Bill Moorhead was killed in a gunfight last year. His father was shot by someone shortly after he sold the ranch. Sheriff has made no arrests in either case.
Now there was no doubt of her unfriendliness.
I'll ride back to Cottonwood Springs. Sorry, ma'am, that I bothered your gunmen.
They're hired to watch. You're not the first. The Bar Z is closed to strangers.
The livery stable man, Bratley, examined the damage through the thickening twilight inside the barn.
Never mind about that busted pommel, it don't matter. But who shot at you, does? How'd it happen?
A gunman on the Bar Z gave me a stranger's welcome.
Oh, might have known. Those damn Californios. It's a wonder you didn't get a bullet in the back like old Tom Moorhead did.
Prez's hands froze on the cinch strap.
These people on the Bar Z shot Tom Moorhead?
Bradley evidently realized he'd spoken out of turn.
Huh? How'd you happen to be on the Bar Z?
Well, I used to know the Moorheads. Hadn't heard they weren't around here anymore and rode over to the ranch to see them.
Well, if you'd said something, I could have told you it was a waste of time. Did you know them well?
Hadn't seen them in years. These people on the ranch have some quarrel with Tom Moorhead?
I can't tell you. Yeah, you hear things. Folks talk sometimes when they ain't sure what they're saying. I never paid much attention. Guess there ain't anything I can tell you. Gonna be riding out tomorrow?
I don't know.
The town hadn't changed much. The same dusty main street, a few new buildings with false fronts. None of it mattered. Nothing mattered here in Cottonwood Springs now, with Tom and Phil Moorhead dead. Then Press noticed a familiar little white building with a sign, Paul Winthrop, M.D. A lamp had been lighted inside against the growing dusk. On an impulse, Press turned in. Doc Winthrop was older, but his cheeks were still red-veined and cheery, his eyes twinkling, his manner courteous.
Something I can do for you?
I'm Press Moorhead, Doc.
Doc Winthrop put his whiskey glass down on the back room desk and shook his head in amazement.
Never would have known you, Press. You've changed. Not only your face. Something inside has changed, boy. You don't look like Cottonwood Springs.
Maybe I held around too much before I drifted down to the Argentine and hooked up with a partner.
Do all right?
Doc Winthrop had found another glass. He poured whiskey into it and handed it to Press.
We made out fair.
Your father never said.
He never knew. We didn't know ourselves whether we'd be bigger the next year or broke. My last two letters home weren't answered, so I thought I'd come back before they forgot all about me.
Married, Press?
No.
Better go back and enjoy life, boy. There's nothing around here for you anymore.
Press drained his whiskey glass.
Who killed my father and brother?
How do I know, Press? Your father never knew why your brother was shot. Phil had been a little wild and been hanging around some wrongins over at Corkscrew Flat. It looked like Phil feuded with someone who put a bullet in his back that night. Your father gave up then, Press. Sold out to this brother and sister from California. He aimed to go to the Argentine and be near you. I guess he didn't tell anyone but me. The sheriff never got any good sign on his killer. Your father being the last Moorhead around here, it's kind of drifted along. There's been rustling going on and one thing and another to keep the sheriff busy.
What might one thing and another be?
Sheriff's been drifting in here hunting the Sugar Kid and his bunch, Press. It kind of looks like they've holed up in the mountains through here somewhere, but they haven't been smoked out.
Who might the Sugar Kid be?
A sweet name for a poison package. Oregon, Idaho, and Montana were his stomping grounds. Things got too hot, and he pulled out with every sheriff for 500 miles itching to get him. His bunch was almost cornered over in the San Juan River country. They fought out and vanished.
Any reason for thinking they're around here?
The Montana sheriff went over to Corkscrew Flat to look around and never came back. Patty O'Leary, kingpin over at Corkscrew Flat, says the Montana man didn't get there.
O'Leary's word carry weight?
His guns do. Our sheriff hasn't spread it around, Press, except to me, but Patty O'Leary's been buying a heap of gumdrops lately. Corkscrew Flat never was partial to gumdrops before. Those northern sheriffs all brought the same story. Find a gunman with a pocket full of gumdrops, and chances are you've got the Sugar Kid. Not much sense to it, but they do say every man's got a weak spot. I'm betting gumdrops will hang the Sugar Kid yet.
The doctor reached for the whiskey bottle.
Take my advice, Press. Go on back to the Argentine. You can't do any good around here. You might get into trouble if word gets out you're Press Moorhead.
Gumdrops. Funny. Damn funny, ain't it? Who are those people who bought the Bar Z?
Two stubborn young fools who haven't got sense enough to run for their lives. Any day now, I'm looking for one or both of them to be hauled in on a wagon bed. Or worse. The girl's too pretty for her own good out there away from the town on the Bar Z and too near Corkscrew Flat.
Well, tell me about them, Doc. Or do you know?
I know better than most people around here. I'm doctoring Bob Brady. They talk to me. Kathleen and Bob Brady grew up on a ranch and went to the cities. San Francisco, mostly, I take it. And Bob Brady studied some in Europe. He's an artist. The doctors told him he'd better get out of the city. He and his sister had enough money to buy the Bar Z from your father. They paid $12,000 cash and took over the mortgage your father owed the bank. Your father took the cash from the bank, mostly big bills and a little gold, put it in a money belt, I guess, ready to leave for the Argentine. A few days later, he rode out to the ranch to see the Bradys. They say he got there and left. It was about a week before he was found in the bottom of Bearhead Canyon near his horse. The horse had been shot. Tom fell with him.
And the money?
Gone. I hate to say this, Press, but maybe you already heard it. There hadn't been any rains. Old Injun Steve, who can track a shadow, showed where your father had ridden up the Bearhead Canyon Trail to the ranch, and then where he came riding back to where his horse was shot. And then another horse had come down the trail over those tracks and gone to the body and then climbed back up the trail again. Injun Steve followed the tracks down to Turquoise Creek and lost them where cattle had been driven over the road. The sheriff did what he could, but there wasn't any proof he could pin for certain. Bob and Kathleen Brady took it pretty hard and, well, you know how folks can get to talking about strangers. Press, the Bradys made a good buy from your father. There wasn't any trouble between them. And the Bradys aren't the kind who'd kill a man in cold blood for his money. But the dust from all that was still in the air when rustling trouble hit the Bar Z. Bob Brady wounded a rustler. Since then, Bob has been shot at. Instead of getting some sense and pulling out, those two have put up no trespassing signs, hired gun-packing hands, and put out word they'll run the Bar Z until hell freezes over, and all strangers are warned to keep outside their wire if they want to stay healthy. Folks still had their back fur up over your father's death. They took the gun hands as proof that the Bradys were tough and looking for trouble. There hasn't been much sympathy for them. And if you ask me how it's going to end, I don't know. But my idea is that Bob and Kathleen Brady have got a grizzly by the tail and they're going to get clawed before it's over.
Are the Bradys friendly with anyone at Corkscrew Flat?
Hell no. They're hiring gun hands to keep out the rustlers. That ought to answer that.
I rode out to the Bar Z today. I got shot at by a gun hand and told by the Brady girl I wasn't wanted around there.
Can't understand that. You being a Moorhead, they'd be friendly to you.
Well, she didn't know who I was.
Well, that's why.
Matter of fact, no one but you, Doc, knows I'm back. I registered at the hotel as John Emery.
Any reason for that, Press?
Not at the time, just an idea. But I'll stay John Emery for a time, Doc.
You're not fooling me, Press. You're looking for trouble now.
I'm not trying to fool you, Doc. I'm just telling you not to say I'm back.
Telling me?
I'm asking you.
A doctor learns to keep his mouth shut, Press. Sometimes the things he has to hold in are hard and hurtful. Many's the time he has to wonder if he's done right. I'll be hoping you keep out of trouble.
Press armed himself with a new rifle, six-shooter, shells, wolfed down some dinner, got a fresh horse, and set out for Corkscrew Flat. Outwardly, he was calm. Inwardly, grief scorched like blazing fire. Thought of Tom Moorhead's drop to the bottom of Bearhead Canyon fanned the flame. Old Tom must have felt a hollow feeling under his belt as his bushwhacked horse launched into space, down, down to the water-smoothed rocks far below. Phil Moorhead's death was different some way. Maybe he had earned a little of it. You could tell what feuding Phil had touched off at Corkscrew Flat. He had always been headstrong, high-tempered. But Tom Moorhead hadn't deserved cold-blooded murder for the stake it had taken him a lifetime of hard work to earn. Doc Winthrop was a level-headed man you could listen to, kindly, too kindly for his own good sometimes. Too quick to back up people he liked. You can bet Doc Winthrop hadn't seen the Brady girl eating gumdrops. Corkscrew Flat was the halfway point. Once there had been mining activity in the rocky heights behind the flat and along the placer washings of Corkscrew Creek and the side canyons that slashed back and up into the mountains. Then Corkscrew Flat had been a rip-roaring center for the district. But the placers worked out. Cattle and sheep outfits pushed up to the mountains, grazing high on the succulent summer grasses. Corkscrew Flat held little now but whiskey, gambling, and dancing. You went to Corkscrew Flat when towns like Cottonwood Springs were too tame or too far away. Now, tonight, under a thin moon, Corkscrew Flat hadn't changed. The same ramshackle old plank buildings and cabins clustered at the upper end of the flat. Half a dozen separate little rivulets still brawled across the boulders and gravel. Willow brush along the water grew thicker, if anything. Lights burned in some of the cabins. The Corkscrew Bar was lighted. It hadn't been dark a night since it opened, Press guessed. Press strode in to find a couple dozen cowmen, prospectors, miners, and a few whiskey soaks, all at the Corkscrew Flat Bar to drink and dance and gamble. The noise of it beat out into the night. Half a dozen girls clung to stumbling dance partners. Eyes settled on him in quick, wary scrutiny. Strangers did well to walk softly here until they proved themselves. A pallid bartender with skin stretched like paper over his face bones set out whiskey and made change from an open cigar box on the back bar.
I ain't seen you afore.
I'm looking for Patty O'Leary.
Patty?
Press sensed he was being watched by the other men nearby. They watched furtively as O'Leary came leisurely from the end of the long bar. The man was short, fat, with a big pinkish face running up to the smooth expanse of a broad, bald skull. He lacked even eyebrows. He might have been an overgrown baby, blonde and cheerful. The two guns in open holsters under his arms seemed incongruous. Then suddenly Press noticed that the pink face merely lacked expression. Even the pale blue eyes looked vacant as they ran over Press.
I'm Patty O'Leary, mister.
Now I'm looking up some old mine locations. They tell me in Cottonwood Springs you know these parts well.
The pale eyes considered him. Then Patty O'Leary smiled until his eyes seemed to sink in crinkles of fat and humor. O'Leary's office stood at the back, off a passage from which other doors opened. An old roll-top desk and half a dozen wooden chairs furnished the office. A wall lamp threw yellow light over old calendars, pictures, reward notices, tacked one on top of another on the walls. O'Leary waved his visitor to a chair.
No use in beating around the bush, O'Leary. What will you do for $5,000?
O'Leary blinked as he dropped into an old wired desk chair.
Cash?
Press nodded.
Got the $5,000 on you, mister?
When I bring $5,000 to Corkscrew Flat, it'll be earned first.
A shadow of disappointment passed over the pink face. Looking at Patty O'Leary, Press could understand why he was kingpin of Corkscrew Flat. His blank bulk seemed to spread an uneasy threat over the dingy little office.
$5,000 cash will buy a heap of things, stranger. What mine were you thinking of?
And call it the O'Leary mine. Maybe it's never paid dividends because it's never been worked right. I'm wondering if $5,000 will bring payor out of it.
That's a smart way to mine. What kind of ore are you looking for?
Who bushwhacked Tom Moorhead?
Patty O'Leary leaned forward, blank-faced, staring.
Who are you?
Not a lawman.
No, the law ain't putting up $5,000 to find out about Moorhead. $5,000 is easy to talk.
I'll show it to you in the Cottonwood Springs Bank tomorrow if you can deliver.
Only someone close to the Moorheads would throw away $5,000 like that. I heard there was a son who went away years ago.
The pale eyes snapped open, staring at Prez.
John Emery is the name. You'll find it on the Cottonwood Springs Hotel register.
A big, soft hand lifted off the chair arm in a slight gesture.
You'll never mind the hotel register. I'm wondering why you rode out here to Corkscrew Flat to see me.
I had an idea you might save me a heap of trouble. It would be worth $5,000.
Oh, set a thief to catch a thief.
If you want it that way.
I like to do business with an honest man. No misunderstanding that way. You always know where you stand. An honest man with $5,000 to spend.
Well?
O'Leary nodded, squinting again.
I'd have to know.
O'Leary rose out of his chair with a revealing quickness.
What is it?
Feller to see you, Patty.
Well, tell him to wait!
Says he's in a hurry.
Coming!
Patty O'Leary stood for a moment, considering. He moved his arms to make certain the holstered guns were free and easy to get at. His pale eyes wandered about the room.
I'll be back.
Press stared at the door a moment and drew his gun from his holster to make sure it was ready for use. Then he checked the rifle. Press stepped into the passage and as quickly stepped back into the doorway, pulse hammering.
Dang!
He'd been able to see across the dance floor to the front half of the bar where O'Leary was meeting a man turning to the front door. One look and he knew McAllister, the hard young gunman riding for the Bar Z. The dance music sawed at Press's nerves as he thought of the gumdrop the Brady girl had eaten. Now one of her gunmen had shown up on furtive business with Patty O'Leary. Press made for the back and was outside in the night a moment later, listening hard as he strained his eyes to the dark. The loom of the building took shape beside him, then one of the nearby cabins, the shadows of the brush clumps scattered across the flat. Moving carefully, Press stepped around the corner of the building and edged toward the front. Somewhere ahead in the night, O'Leary would be talking to the Bar Z gunman. And what O'Leary might be saying might mean a bullet in the back for Press Moorhead. The window shade of O'Leary's office had a half inch of space at the bottom one could look through. Press made sure the office was still empty, the door closed.
You didn't say that before, O'Leary. How much more money do you think you'll get?
They were behind the nearest clump of willows. O'Leary of Corkscrew Flat and the Brady girl, whom Doc Winthrop had worried about because she lived nearer the flat than Cottonwood Springs. Thick as thieves, the two of them tangled in the same business, tarred with the same stick. Press went carefully over the rocks and gravel toward the willows. He'd heard enough to damn the Bradys. He had to hear more now. Money wouldn't buy the truth of this from Patty O'Leary. Behind Press, a stone turned against another stone. He swung around, too late to escape the sharp order.
Stand still, you skunk!
Press was already pulling his gun. He'd taken a chance and lost. Caught now, he'd get short shrift. The top of Press's head seemed to explode, and he plunged down. A kind of consciousness lingered.
Get the hell back in there! Drinks on the house! This is a little private business that don't need attention.
Is he dead?
A foot kicked Press, and a rough hand closed tightly on his wrist. Then a match flared.
Not yet. Who is he?
I don't know him. He walked in saying he wanted to ask some questions about old mines around here. I didn't have a chance to hear what he wanted to know. Did that Brady girl leave?
The fog was closing down. Press tried to fight it back.
What do you think she did with a gunfighter under her nose? You ain't lying to me, O'Leary.
Why should I lie to you?
This fellow eased onto the Bar Z today over that old canyon trail. I headed him off, and he claimed he was looking for the Moorhead men. Now he turns up asking about old mines? Somebody's lying. What's he really doing here, I wonder? When did he walk in here?
The pain-filled fog blotted out their voices. Left to die, Press woke next to a stream deep in the willows. His head felt like it was the dance floor for the girls at the bar. He reached up to his head where he felt the blood crusted in his hair and the scab where the bullet left a nasty gash.
God, they must have thought I'd die the way my head probably looks. Hell, maybe I did.
He slowly got himself upright, then took some time for the world to stop spinning. Press rinsed his head in the cold stream and painfully tried to consider his options.
I guess it's time to visit the Bradys.
Outlaws don't win awards for smarts. The fact that Press found his horse and kit standing at the rail of the saloon offered more proof of that. He lit out for the Bar Z. Press worked his way along Grizzly Mountain, through the foothills, to the little bluffs along Turquoise Creek. He followed a familiar trail. Half a mile from the bluffs, the horse picked up his head. The moon was gone, but there was enough starlight to see the pricked ears, the horse testing the wind. Press reined up and tried to read the night. He rode on cautiously, sure he heard cattle. Press reached Turquoise Creek Bluffs, 100 feet high, with the creek shallows rippling along the bottom, and the ranch road following the other side and the long bend the creek made with the curve of the bluffs. Then he tied the horse 100 yards back from the bluffs. He went forward on foot and looked down into the black drop with wary amazement.
Look at that.
Down there on the ranch road, cattle were moving. Not a few cows and steers, not a small bunch. A trail herd was strung out down there for 1/4 mile by the sounds. Cows, calves, and steers. The point men had long passed. The drags were moving abreast when Press reached the bluffs. A match flared across the creek as a drag rider lighted a cigarette. A moment later, another match flared. Bar Z cattle were on the move, but not to pasture, not trail herding this way in the middle of the night. Uncertainly, Press stood there, trying to fathom the mystery. Brady cattle moving hurriedly, steadily toward the ranch boundaries. Doc Winthrop had spoken of rustlers working on the Bar Z and other ranches. Against that threat, the Brady gunmen had been riding the Bar Z fences. Now, where were the gunmen? If the men down there were not rustlers, then the Bradys were sending their own beef off the Bar Z furtively, hurriedly, in the night. That meant fear. And it would be fear of Paddy O'Leary and the man who called himself John Emery. Fear of a lawman getting close to the Bar Z, to the Bradys, to the proof of Tom Moorhead's murder, to the hiding place of the Sugar Kid and his killers. The Sugar Kid must be on the Bar Z with the Bradys. Press watched the herd pass and thought. If the Bradys were clearing the beef off the Bar Z, they'd be moving out of the ranch house, too. And the Cottonwood Springs Bank would have land and fences and buildings and nothing else for its mortgage on the Bar Z. Press pointed the horse toward the ranch house and the Bradys. Press met no one. Half a mile from the ranch house, he swung off across the range, circling wide and coming through the scattered brush to the draw where the ranch buildings lay. Dawn was not more than 2 hours off. The stars shone bright, the air felt sharply cool. Down there on the flat, the bunkhouse lay dark, the corrals seemed empty. Only a house window showed light. Press tied the horse at the edge of the draw and went down the slope on foot. He came up behind the corrals. They were empty. So was the stable. The bunkhouse door hung half open. No one snored or moved inside. Gun cocked, Press struck a match and looked inside. The flare showed him empty bunks, a careless litter on the floor as if men had gone through their war bags hastily and discarded everything not needed. Tight-lipped, Press moved to the friendly log and stone house that had been part of his boyhood. The window was still lighted. A saddled horse stood out in front. Behind that window lay the big main room to the right of the center hall. A murmur of voices came from inside.
Give me that bottle again, as long as it's free.
Deal of cards, Pete, if we've got to sit here.
Prez did not need light to find the latch and ease the door open. His feet moved unerringly in the dark hall to the closed living room door.
Hoist them!
Oh. Hands flew up.
Hell! Now what?
A lamp burned dimly in a wall bracket at the end of the room. 5 men had been playing poker at the center table. Press scowled at their strained, questioning looks. Grizzled Ed Safford and Hilo Kenny sat there with unreadable faces. 15 years back, they had been riding for Tom Moorhead. The next two were younger men, cowhands, and the fifth was Doc Winthrop.
Well, Doc, you fooled me.
Doc Winthrop looked unhappy. He was pale.
Just take it easy now.
Shut up! I'll find out damn quick what you're doing here. You, stand up!
The nearest young man got out of his chair.
Back to me! Got a money belt?
Nope.
Press made a quick one-hand search, did the same thing to the other young cowhand. Neither man seemed to be carrying cash.
Sit down. Where's that Brady girl and her brother?
We don't know where the Bradys are. Take it easy.
For all your talk about the Bradys, maybe you didn't know this cutthroat outlaw called the Sugar Kid had been training with him. Maybe you didn't know the Brady girl made night rides over to Corkscrew Flat to see Paddy O'Leary. Maybe you don't know the Bar Z cattle are being moved off tonight. You've got a hell of a lot to explain.
Doc Winthrop looked like an old man now.
There's nothing I can do. I didn't know all that. And you haven't done any good telling it. Don't move. Look there in the kitchen door behind you.
It's buckshot, brother. Don't move is right.
The speaker had been sitting there beyond the dark doorway behind Press, invisible unless you looked closely. Now he was on his feet, thick-chested, beefy, white teeth gleaming and a short black beard as he enjoyed the moment.
Pitch that smoke iron down on the floor.
Don't try anything wild, Press. He'll cut you in two with buckshot. Throw down that gun like he says.
The shotgun was cocked and ready. Press tossed his gun on the floor. Grizzled Ed Safford brought his arms down.
Oh, I thought you was gonna get it, sir.
Press eyed the group bitterly.
I didn't think I'd catch you in anything like this, Safford.
Me neither.
I ain't sure what it's all about, but do you figure I'd be sitting in the living room playing cards at this time of night if a gun wasn't keeping me at it? Or Doc either? You just cold-jawed yourself in on a stew pot full of hell and made it worse.
The bearded man came leisurely into the room, cradling the shotgun. His finger cuddled the trigger. He grinned unpleasantly.
So you didn't die after all. Huh? And you know all about the Sugar Kid and O'Leary and who killed that old codger in Bearhead Canyon. And you're on the warpath to do something about it.
Press watched the man closely. The unpleasant grin grew broader.
And you got a line on these men, too, and got it all figured out. All you need is the Bradys now, and the Sugar Kid, and you'll be all set.
Prez stood and considered that some of this made sense, and even answered some questions. Some didn't. But the buckshot gun made sense, and the bearded man was working up to something.
The Bradys have lit out and won't be back. The kid and the rest of the boys have gone with them. I'll be tailing along after I hold this bunch here for a day or so. But you're the skunk who caused all this upset. You come looking to raise hell, and I'm going to give it to you with a load of buckshot.
He meant it. The glint of it was in his look and the tense curl of his finger over the shotgun trigger.
You want to butcher me without giving me a chance at a gun?
That's right. Get down on your knees and beg if it'll make you feel better.
Look at this!
Ed's hand had already hurled a fistful of poker chips off the table. Everyone at the table dove for cover. The bearded man's head jerked as the poker chip struck his face.
Ah, son of a...
The shotgun recoil drove the bearded man back a step. He hurled the gun at Press and jumped backward as he clawed for his holstered gun. The empty shotgun half-numbed Press's arm as he knocked it aside and dove for the man. Two bullets hit the bearded man in the chest, one centered on his face. Ed Safford got up from his crouching position behind the table and blew smoke from the muzzle of the gun Press had tossed to the floor.
Didn't think I could make it. But you was a goner anyway, Press. I made the gamble.
Press looked at his hand. It was unsteady.
Yeah, I feel shaky that way. Some gamble, Ed, but how come? He might have got you, too.
Think we could have sat there and watched Tom Moorhead's boy get butchered like a barbecue beef? I seen Hilo inching a fist towards the whiskey bottle and knowed he was aiming to chuck it. And the doc was getting stiff in his chair like he was going over the top of the table. I just happened to beat him to it.
Just happened? Oh, Ed, I'm ashamed. Doc, Hilo, I'm apologizing.
One of the young cowhands, still pale and shaken, stood up.
What in the hell is it all about?
You heard?
Doc Winthrop nodded.
We heard, Press, but we still don't know much. I got to worrying about you tonight, so I hitched up my buggy and drove out here to see the Bradys. Some gunmen met me down the road. They took my team and buggy and brought me to the bunkhouse. On the way, they talked to each other about how the Sugar Kid tortured Patty O'Leary, and that later, one of the Bar Z gun hands and O'Leary were found dead in one of the line shacks. When we got to the bunkhouse, these hombres were being held under guard. After a time, we were brought into the house here and left, with that man watching us. We were told we'd be held here a day or so, and anyone trying to get away would be shot.
It was those damn gunmen the Brady woman hired. We turned in at the bunkhouse when this McAllister rode up and called a couple of them outside. Next thing, four of us had guns stuck in our faces, and we were told to be quiet and not ask any questions. Are the Bradys really skinning out, Prez?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I know.
They listened silently with hardening faces.
I can understand some things now. It was plain to us she hired those gunfighters herself. Her brother was kind of puny and didn't stir out much. She gave him orders, mostly through this young McAllister. Told us regular hands to go on with the work, and new men would look out for rustlers and help us when they were needed. We never did know where she hired them. They was a closed-mouthed bunch, but we figured she must be on the right track. There wasn't any more rustling after they started riding the fences. And all the time she was thick with O'Leary over at the flat.
I know there was talk about Tom Moorhead's murder, but I couldn't figure the truth of it laid here at the Bar Z with us. They figure on 2-3 days clear start. Are they going to get away with it?
Doc Winthrop had been listening in troubled silence.
Man, I'm only a country doctor, but I brought folks into the world and closed their eyes on the way out. I've talked to folks when their hearts were breaking and when the fear of death was on them. I've heard their secrets, their sorrows, and their happinesses. None of you has ever had reason to think me a fool.
Hell no, Doc. Who said so?
And don't call me a fool for saying Kathleen Brady and her brother aren't guilty of all this. I sat by young Brady's bed while he told me of the things he meant to do after he got well here on the Bar Z. I heard the truth of it in his sister's voice when she walked outside with me and asked for me to hope that their ideas would work out. Tears were in her eyes. That girl never would have let a man be tortured as this man O'Leary was tortured. Press, Hollow, Ed, go easy. Those two aren't guilty of all this.
An embarrassed silence followed.
Then who is guilty, Doc?
I don't know.
They're gone.
I know. I'm just asking you to go slow in your judgments until you're sure.
Doc, Safford, Press, and Hilo had the ranch house and outbuildings to themselves in the search for guns, cartridges, extra saddles, while the two young hands went to search pastures for horses. Doc Winthrop finally noticed the wound on Press's head and insisted on examining it. His doctor's kit had been taken with his buggy, but there was a medicine chest in the house. He cleaned and bandaged the furrowed scalp. A rifle, 2 gun belts, and several boxes of shells had been overlooked in the bunkhouse. More guns and cartridges were found stored away in the ranch house. Saddles and bridles had been left in the saddle shed. Ed Safford looked up from loading a pistol.
All we need is horses.
10 minutes later, Drummond Hooves brought them outside with guns ready, then running to guide the rush of a full dozen horses into the waiting corral.
Had luck and found them at this end of the flat near the water.
Hilo almost smiled.
About time we had some luck. Somebody light that lantern while I hang a rope on one of these ornery broom tails.
As the group saddled and mounted their horses, Press turned to Doc.
Doc, why not ride back to Cottonwood Springs and tell the sheriff?
Tell him the Bradys are moving their cattle off their land?
Tell him about O'Leary, what I found out about my father and this outlaw the Bradys are running with.
If a Cottonwood Springs posse thought it had proof the Bradys caused your father's death, Press, the Bradys would be damned right then. I'll not be the one to ride for the sheriff before I know the truth. I want to see the Bradys first.
I guess we all do. Let's go.
The cold, faint light of the new day found them riding hard beyond Bar Z land into the foothill country that sloped to the northwest toward the Parados River, 2 days' ride away. At a short halt to breathe the horses, Ed Safford scowled over the cigarette he was rolling.
This don't make sense, Press. They're leaving a trail a kid could follow. A couple of days this way and they'll be in the Parados Valley smack near the Parados Sheriff and other ranches in the railroad.
And the railroad shipping pens and cattle buyers. The Bradys have a legal right to drive their cattle to Parados and sell every head for the best money they can get. For cash money, that'll leave them free to travel.
Cottonwood Springs would be nearer.
And hostile to them. Questions would be asked. The bank might have something to say about it. In Parados, they can sell and leave quick. The Bradys warned the public off the Bar Z. Their gunmen got folks out of the habit of coming around. Cottonwood Springs folk don't get over on this side of the mountains much. A gunman stayed on the ranch to make sure you men didn't carry word away, and they thought they'd taken care of me. They got plenty of time to sell and travel before the word gets around.
Hilo Kenny looked into the brightening sky.
Chances are they'll grub and water and grass a little when they reach Porcupine Creek. They won't want to gant the critters down too much. We'll catch them down there in a couple of hours.
And chances are they'll be watching the back trail. We better cut off to the left and hit the creek lower down.
They circled off into the higher foothills and rode down through the broken country toward Porcupine Creek. The sun was high and bright when they watered the horses and turned upstream beyond the creek.
Scatter out so one man just sights the next. I'll take the point nearest the creek and pull my hat off if I see anything. The rest of you do the same.
A mile farther on, they had scattered until Ed Safford was the only man in sight, and Ed was hard to keep track of, riding well off to the left and behind. In this broken country, one could not see far, and sound did not carry. Suddenly, Press topped a swell of land and looked down a slope onto a big grassy flat where a trail herd was grazing. He had not realized the Brady herd could be so near. He spotted a chuck wagon, a two-horse buggy, and two riders circling the cattle. The rest of the crew was afoot by the chuck wagon fire, evidently eating. Keen eyes were watching, for the nearest rider yelled something toward the chuck wagon and pointed his horse toward the slope of the rise. A moment later, another rider swung up on a horse by the wagon and came galloping. Press watched with narrowing eyes. His face was set, hard, and bleak. The rider coming from the chuck wagon was a woman. It was the Brady girl, coming of her own free will to look the stranger over. Bitterness that had been building up against Kathleen Brady and her gun crew held Press motionless, watching her. He deliberately left his hat on as she approached. This was Press Moorhead's quarrel now, and only the Brady girl and one rider were coming. Halfway up the slope, the rider waited for her. They exchanged a few words, and the man came on ahead of her. He was grinning, and near enough now for Press to see that it was not McAllister, but a younger man, double-gunned, carrying a rifle in his saddle boot to match the rifle by Press's leg. The Brady girl wore a buckskin riding shirt, short jacket, small sombrero. Even at a distance, it seemed to Press that the sleepless night had left her weary, tired, had dulled the fire that had blazed out from her spirit only yesterday. The young man eyed Press and smiled.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Live around here?
Riding through.
Alone?
More or less. I wasn't looking for a trail herd.
The man didn't know him. The night had left Press Moorhead an unshaven, soiled range rider, but the Brady girl would know him quickly enough. Press sat loosely, watchfully, waiting for her recognition. Her man was speaking as she came to them.
We're moving some beef to the railroad. The lady runs the Bar Z brand over against Grizzly Mountain. She says grub and coffee are hot down at the chuck wagon if you feel for a bite. Ain't that right, ma'am?
She reached them in time to hear the last. Prez felt his nerves tightening to the explosive point as she looked at him stonily and nodded.
If you're hungry.
I'm not.
Her white throat moved as she swallowed. She knew him. The hand she rested on the saddle horn trembled. Press noted the men down at the chuck wagon watching them. The Brady rider was eyeing him narrowly, and his smile had thinned.
Yeah, ride down and talk with the boys, stranger. How about it, ma'am?
We'd like to have you.
Press met her glance squarely for an instant. The fear that leaped at him was so poignant and startling that Press sat there shocked and puzzled. But from the corner of his eye, he saw the young gunman touch a spur to his horse and move carelessly over to the right.
Nice horse you've got.
Press nodded and saw the man trying to read the brand.
That's a Bar Z horse, ain't it?
Press had been expecting the streaking draw that started now with no other warning. Amazement flashed on the young gunman's face as roaring lead knocked him sprawling from the saddle.
You killed him! You've killed Bob! Oh, why did it have to be this way?
The gunman rolled over on the ground and lifted his gun. Press spurred hard to get out of the way. It was hard to shoot a man sprawled out and dying. The horse under Press stumbled down to his knees as Press swept the rifle out of the boot and jumped. The Brady man was through. The gun had dropped from his limp hand and his eyes were closed. But he was dying with a snarling smile of satisfaction on his young face. Grimly, Press ended his horse's suffering. Press whirled on the Brady girl. She sat there, pale and frozen.
That your brother?
That man! My brother's down there with the rest of them, a prisoner! And they'll kill him now, as they said they would!
She had come without guns. There was no danger from her. Press was looking toward the chuck wagon. Down there, men were already spurring horses toward the trouble.
Nobody's getting killed down there. What are you trying to tell me?
She dismounted, dragging her horse to him.
Take this horse and ride. Maybe I can make them believe you took my horse. They'll have to believe me.
Aren't you the boss down there?
Do I act like I'm the boss? Are you blind? They took over the ranch last night. They're driving our cattle off to sell. They're taking my brother and me along to sign the sale papers. We're helpless. I had to ride here and ask you down there so they could see who you were. They're holding my brother. They told me I better bring you back.
Well, get on that horse and ride like hell. I'll hold him.
No, no! That isn't the way. I'll go back to the chuck wagon. It's the only chance I've got to help Bob. They need us both until the cattle are sold. Oh, please, don't stand there making it harder.
Cattle were scattering before the gunmen spurring across the flat. Four men, and they came with rifles out and their purpose plain. Two of them started to circle out to the right, one swerved off to the left, and one came straight on. You could see they meant to surround the dismounted man and cut off his escape. Press caught the dying man's six gun off the ground and took the reins from Kathleen Brady.
If I don't see you again, Doc Winthrop will tell you who I am. If I don't see Doc again, tell him I was wrong and he was right.
Press swung onto her horse and grinned down at her.
Wish I had time to tell you myself.
Press thumbed fresh cartridges into the guns. He holstered one gun and kept the other in his hand.
No! Run away!
Press put her horse into a gallop down the slope toward the chuck wagon and the gunman coming for him. The man riding straight at him was the hard-faced young gunman called McAllister. Somehow Press had expected that. He had been increasingly certain as to who McAllister must be. Paddy O'Leary would have known. Press thought of O'Leary and Tom Moorhead as he cocked his six gun and spurred hard down the slope. The other riders were swerving back, but they were too far away now. They would not be there when Press Moorhead met the Sugar Kid. McAllister reined to an abrupt stop and brought up his rifle. Press heard the close scream of lead. Then a second bullet came still closer. Now Press was within six gun range. McAllister slammed the rifle into the scabbard, drew both his handguns, and came on. Press shoved his emptied gun inside his belt and snatched out his other weapon. A bullet clipped across his shoulder. Another smashed into his left arm. Then they rushed together. The snarling grin on McAllister's face was plain. No fear there. A killer was working at his trade and taking his chances. Then one of McAllister's guns flew through the air as his arm went limp from a grazing bullet. Three shots left. Press held them until the last moment. McAllister snatched desperately at the saddle horn. He clawed at the air and fell as his horse swerved aside and Press flashed past.
Come on, for Christ's sakes, get in there.
Press awkwardly tried to reload as he rode through the stampeding cattle to the chuck wagon and Doc Winthrop's buggy. He could barely use the wounded arm. Now through the dust haze and thunder of cattle hoofs, bullets were shrilling as the other three riders closed in, working their rifles. Clutching his rifle, Press made a flying dismount at the chuck wagon. One look was enough to place the thin, pale young man struggling there on the ground with wrists and ankles that had been tied with pigging strings. Bob Brady bore a striking resemblance to his sister.
Well, keep down!
Using the back of the chuck wagon for a rest, Press sighted the rifle carefully on the nearest rider. The man was fair in the sights when Press squeezed the trigger. As he threw another shell into place, Press saw the rider slide out of the saddle. Two gunmen left, and they suddenly seemed to realize that the chuck wagon made a perfect fort for an expert rifleman. They swung sharply around in the dust haze and bent low as they rode for cover. Press sighted on one man and got the horse. The rider staggered up from the fall and broke into a limping run for the higher ground. Then he stopped as other riders burst over the rise and raced down the slope. Caught by surprise, the last rider whirled his horse toward the nearby brush along Porcupine Creek. Press stepped out from the chuck wagon and watched two horsemen race across the slope in an angle to cut the man off. Under a hail of gunfire, the outlaw's horse plunged into a rolling fall. The rider got to his knees, then to his feet, with his hands high in the air. Press found a butcher knife on the chuck wagon and cut the pig strips binding Bob Brady.
I guess it's over. Your sister's all right. I'm Press Moorhead, and I'll be obliged if you'll help me get this arm tied up. Are there any more of these gun artists around that you folks took pleasure in hiring?
No. And they're the last we'll ever hire. Kathleen had a wild idea she could find who killed Tom Moorhead by buying information from that whiskey seller at Corkscrew Flat. He made her believe he could get the truth if she paid him money to hand to the right man. Then, when rustlers got our cattle, it seemed logical to have O'Leary get us some men who were ready to use their guns and keep strangers out. O'Leary sent us these men, and the rustling stopped. Yesterday, Kathleen told me that a man had come asking for the Moorheads. She thought he was a law officer. I didn't know she was so worried that she'd ride over to Corkscrew Flat last night and ask O'Leary if he had information for her. He wanted more money. Kathleen took McAllister for protection on the ride, and there was a shooting outbreak while she was talking to O'Leary. Kathleen galloped home alone. She hadn't been home an hour when McAllister came to the door. Instead of explaining what had happened, he told us he was clearing out with his men, and we were going along to sell the Bar Z cattle for him. McAllister told us he and his men were all on the run from the law, and O'Leary had been hiding them out and helping them dispose of cattle they rustled. O'Leary told them we would hire them, and they'd be safer inside our fences, drawing pay than hiding out. So they worked for us and left our cattle alone. Last night, O'Leary double-crossed them in some way, and they decided to move on and take all our stock and make us sell it for them. I didn't like the way McAllister looked at Kathleen all this morning. It's pretty terrible to be helpless to protect someone you care for.
I'll bet. But she's all right now. Doc Winthrop snagged her a horse. Well, here they come.
But Ed Safford was there first, leaping off his horse.
Press, why didn't you shuck your hat when you seen trouble? You done us dirt and stole the fight.
Press grinned as he stepped away from the chuck wagon to meet Doc Winthrop and Kathleen Brady.
Well, I'll tell you about that later, Ed. Right now, I've got other things to tell. I was too busy to think of them when I left the lady back there, but they're starting to come back to me now.
Ed Safford didn't get it. Wise old Doc Winthrop probably wasn't fooled, judging by the way he was smiling. As Press limped forward, something hungry and eager that had been with him through the long years of exile went to that meeting with Doc Winthrop and the Brady girl, who was sitting her horse with the proud fire that was the expression of her spirit. Nothing that had happened in this terror-filled day had been able to quench that fire. Press knew that nothing ever would.